What's up, everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this the first ever episode 16 of Cloud Control. And it's a bit of a different one today. We got a lot of TV and movies. Just TV, actually, but stuff that's not games. So how exciting. Oh, my God, everybody. It's Neville. He's on video right now. Oh, say hi to the show, Neville.
Say hi.
You know, usually okay. We might restart the recording in this situation, but today I think we're just going to wing it, and Neville made an appearance for the first time.
You know what? He was chilling so nice, and the second we start recording, he was like, yeah, I'm going to jump on the desk. This is a great idea.
Well, he's just excited about our topic today, Katie. He's excited for The Last of Us.
You know what? He loves The Last of Us. Well, actually, he's excited mostly for the God of War show, but he just figures if The Last of Us show is good, then the God of War show might be good, and that's his favorite game. So
okay,
he's pretty pumped on this.
Well, that makes sense, but you're spoiling listener mail for later, so let's save that for later on. And maybe we should just get into the regular show. So of course, this is Cloud Control. We're a video game podcast. We come out every week and talk about video games and other things we're doing. This week, that involves some TV shows we wanted to talk about instead, but have no fear, there's a game in there as well. So we're going to start off talking about The Last of Us, the new HBO TV show. Like, man, we have been waiting for this thing for what feels like forever, and we got all these little teases finally here. So we saw the first episode. We're going to give our impressions on that. I played a game called Tiny Ken, so I'm going to tell you guys about that afterwards. After that, Kate's going to tell us about another TV show called Invincible. So a lot going on today, but just before we talk about any of it, we want to thank everyone who already is part of our subscription plan. You can subscribe to our podcast if you want through Anchor for $1 a month, and all of the proceeds for 2023 will be going to the Canadian Red Cross. So thank you for everyone who helps us donate to that cause. And let's get into the show, Kate, I guess. So let's talk about the episode number one of The Last of Us from HBO. Now, we're planning to talk about all of the episodes of this show. There's going to be 9 of them. What we've decided to do here is create a little bonus show for our review of The Last of Us HBO. So aside from this episode, the rest will be on a bonus playlist on our feeds and coming out every week sometime in between that episode airing and the next one coming out on the next Sunday. We're not going to be held to a certain day. It's going to be flexible based on our schedules, but we will be talking about the entire show. And you know what? Let's just get into it, Kate. First impressions. I'm excited to watch the rest of this series because big picture, I think this was a very impressive start for The Last of Us.
I completely agree. Like, this was exactly what I was hoping for. Like, it looked good. Like, all the trailers look good. The casting looked great. Like, everything pointed to the show being like not a letdown, but there's always that fear, right, of like, oh god, I really hope it's good. And then yeah, no, I'm so excited about the rest of the show coming out.
Oh yeah, definitely. So I don't know, where do you want to start with this whole thing? Like, do you want to start with Joel and Ellie, or I mean Pedro Pascal was excellent as Joel, I think, in this show. We got to spend a lot of time with him in this first episode. And just to say, we're going to be spoiling the hell out of this. There's going to be, we both played the game, we know the story, and we're going to assume you do too. So if you don't, you might want to skip over, play the game first, and come back to this podcast. But I think Pedro Pascal was great as Joel. He skirted that line perfectly between being like, this is the Joel that I know, but he brought his own kind of, he was almost like a little bit more warm than Joel in the game. The fact that I get, I don't know if it's like kind of the humor that happened between him and Ellie, but there was a bit of levity to him in this that I really liked. But at the same time, it's like, no, he's a serious dude at the same time. And you can tell that he's really had to do some bad stuff to survive in the world. And I think it's just really believable the way that he's kind of changed into this person, the way he portrays him that we see in this first episode.
Yeah, and one of the things this show does that kind of has an advantage over the games is we actually got a longer section of their life, like before the outbreak. Like, one of the things we talked about before this episode is like, how are they going to start it, right? Like, are we going to get Joel and Ellie and then the Sarah stuff like in flashbacks? And I think we both had kind of assumed that like we're going to get a cold open with the Sarah stuff and then we're going to flash forward, and that's kind of how it happened. But there was a little bit more to it than just what the sections focus on in the game. So it's interesting because the show's obviously going to be very condensed to fit into the format of a TV series, but we got a bit of extra time that's not necessarily like what's covered in the games. But I think it worked really well for a TV show. Like, that first half an hour before you cut to current time was so stressful because you know what's going to happen, and they just kept teasing it like it was such a slow burn, but not boring or slow pace, just that, like, you know, there's impending doom and yeah. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. And it was so intentional, you know, right? Because, like, mm-hmm. I would imagine, like, especially for those of us that know what's going to happen from the game, we don't mind that slow burn because it's almost like that anticipation of coming up the roller coaster mm-hmm. and like, oh, they're spending some time together tonight, you know, like, oh, something nice is happening. And we just know it's going to end terribly. But I would imagine, like, I mean, people will probably have some idea. They know it's a zombie story, but it's that little bit of, like, you wouldn't expect a character like her to like die at the start the way she does. I think they just built that moment really well, like you said. And I'd be so curious. I meant to look at this, but it totally slipped my mind of, like, how many references are kind of in that scene within Joel and Sarah's house. You know, beforehand, because in the game, you know, you walk around her bedroom and you can pick up all the trinkets and look at the music posters, and her clothes are on the floor, and you can go into Joel's room, you know, etc. And I would love to see, like, I'm sure someone's done it online already, like a freeze frame of, like, oh yeah, that's a reference to this, and like she's wearing the same thing here. But I'm sure there's tons mm-hmm. of that kind of thing, and I really appreciate that. And I'm sure that's a lot to do with you know, like we said, like Druckmann and all those guys from the game being on the TV show as well.
Yeah, well, we even pointed a few things out while we were watching it. Like, when she gives him the watch, it's very, very similar to the actual game scene. Like, even down to her joking about, like, well, I got the money from dealing drugs, which is A, mm-hmm. funny, and B, like, foreshadowing, because Joel does go on to actually deal drugs as a smuggler. But that's, like, ripped, like, straight from the game. And I think there's some other things we knew even just from the trailer, like, the shirt she's wearing is the same shirt that Sarah wears in the game, and it's the same, like, poster in her bedroom. So there's tons of little details. Like, obviously the song that plays when they're doing the title credit is, like, the Last of Us song. Like, there's so many things, but I think it walked a good line of not being too pandering and just being like, see, did you notice that? See, did you notice that? Like, it wasn't in your face. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, like, it wasn't just literally scene for scene from the show, which just doesn't work in the pacing of a TV show. So based exclusively on the first episode, I think they've hit a really good balance, and I'm interested to see how similar it stays or how much it's going to deviate from the game, if at all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it already kind of has deviated from the game a little bit, and something that I think was a really smart inclusion was, actually, we talked about the start. It didn't open with Joel and Sarah in their house. It opened actually with, like, a 60s talk show. Mm-hmm. Which was completely new, as far as I understand, to the series. And it was John Hannah, I guess, explaining, like, pandemics and kind of giving the backstory of how this fungus might affect, you know, human beings in the way that it affects other animals. And I think that was a really smart thing to do, because it set sort of like this creepy tone, and it ignored a lot of, like, in the game, I don't remember how exactly they tell you how fungus works, but, you know, I would imagine it's some kind of cutscene conversation, or like conversation as you're walking through the streets, right?
I think it's that, and I think you also get a lot of information, like, as you go from, like, notes that you stop and read, and those, like audio recordings that you find, which those are great in a game, but, like, they don't translate to a show, right? Like, you can't just pause a show 20 minutes in and be like, read this note.
Yeah, no, like, exactly. It wouldn't work. Yeah. So I think this kind of contextualized it really well, in terms of, like, having a reason for there to be a believable way for them to incorporate that conversation without it being like, why would Tess explain that to Joel? He's living in the same world. He knows about it. He doesn't mm-hmm. need to be told. So I think that was really smart. And they did the same thing contextualizing again, just to show you how dangerous the world is later on, when, you know, there's that scene kind of where that one kid is walking and you think it's Ellie, first of all, but it's not. Like, that scene was so important to me, and I was thinking about it after the show. So, and I was like, oh, could they have cut that out? It was pretty long, you know. It was just some random kid that walks into the quarantine zone, you know, has a bite. They show with the bite. Clearly they're infected. They're going to turn into a zombie. So what do they have to do? They have to kill the kid, right? Like, it's really morbid, but, like, that's what they have to do. And they show that, and, like, it's to contextualize, like, this world is just brutal, right? Like, this is how they treat anyone. Doesn't matter if you're elderly or adult or like a little kid like this. This is your fate. And so I guess that just emphasizes the importance of Ellie's survival to the viewership, which I think is an interesting way to do it. But yeah, just it's such a brutal world, and they really convey it. And I think that's a great example of how.
Yeah, I think that scene was fantastic as well, for the exact same reason. And it's heartbreaking. Like, you know exactly what's going to happen, where they do the scanner, which is good because that sets up for the finale of the episode two, showing you how those scanners work. And then also, you know, it comes up red, kid's infected. And that girl tells him, like, oh, well, we'll get you, you know, anything you want to eat. Like, we'll get you your medicine. You're going to be fine. And it's just heartbreaking because, you know, she's lying. So yeah. That alone is a brutal setup. But then, of course, they have the punch where Joel's then, you know, at the body truck. And he's got to pick up that kid. Like, he's got a horrible job. You do not want to be one of the body guys. Oh, God,
no, you don't.
But, like, it's just brutal. And it also does a good job of not only setting up the context of how the world is, but also Joel's character, like the desensitization that he's able to just kind of pick that kid up and, like, you know, for lack of a better term, just sort of like, it's like he's taking out the garbage, right? Like,
yeah.
He is so like cut off from his emotions at this point, not only from the tragedy he's experienced in his personal life, but also just like the world he's living in. Like, you cannot sit there and just, you know, be sad and like succumb to how awful things are, because you don't have the choice. Like, you gotta do the body job and then you're signing up for sewer duty the next day. Like, this is genuinely horrible.
Yeah, and Joel seems to have it pretty well compared to some of the other people. Like, he clearly has a connection with like that dude in the radio tower, you know, and he's well connected. Like, Tess, I guess we can talk about her in a second, but obviously he's kind of a well-trusted person of her. Like, he seems to have, obviously he's dealing drugs and doing illegal things, so he's got enough food tickets. But I mean, some people in that situation, they just must be like scrounging compared to him too, and it's not like he's got a glamorous setup.
Yeah, no kidding. So there's two things I want to point out. First of all, the detail that he has to keep the plastic bag from the drugs that he sells is so good, because it's such a ridiculously small thing that you maybe wouldn't think about otherwise. But when they point out the fact that like that would be a commodity because you just wouldn't be able to get one otherwise, like, they're not producing or like making things, right? They're just like scavenging and living on like what's left after the world's basically just been totally destroyed. Yeah, so exactly. So that's a great detail. And the other thing I want to go back to, you mentioned, was the very beginning scene where they're having those like scientists and those people are discussing like how a pandemic works. I love that for The Last of Us because I think it works so well with what the story's about. Like, a lot of zombie shows tend to be the big central mystery and kind of conflict is obviously the survival aspect, but a lot of them go into the like, how was the zombie virus spread? Like, where did it start? And that's a central like point that is going to be a big narrative thread throughout the story. But in The Last of Us, like, that's not really what's important, because what we're focusing on is the relationships and how people are affected by being in this kind of situation. And so we don't have to worry, like, okay, we know how the zombies are created. We know what happened in at least enough detail that we're not, you know, is not the main question on our mind. And then we don't have to focus on that anymore. We can move forward with what's actually important to the story of The Last of Us, which is the characters. And I think that is such a smart way to very quickly get new audience members on board and get them to then focus on the right thing that they need to be focusing on.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's a great segue towards some of the characters we haven't talked about yet. Because I was really impressed with Marlene. I think the actress, her name's Merle Dandridge, that played Marlene. I think she was just awesome. She was, you know, very authoritative. And I think there was some humor in that role as well when she turned to that other girl and she's like, Kim, your fucking ear has been blown off. Like, that was such a funny scene. There was so much tension that was like, you know, she'd been shot and like there was guns being pointed at people. And that line was just a perfect, you know, icebreaker of the tension. But I don't know if you want to talk about Marlene, but I wanted to talk about Ellie because obviously it was a ton of fun to see Bella Ramsey as Ellie. I think that was one of those, like, you know, for all the controversy around Chris Pratt as Mario and like what people think about that one, I think this was one of those that's like, oh, Bella Ramsey is Ellie. This is a perfect casting choice. And it was. She was so like tenacious and you know, spunky. I think even more so than I remember Ellie being earlier in the game, to be honest. Like, she was almost like the already like the distraught version of Ellie you meet later on in the franchise than kind of the earlier version. So I don't know if that's been kind of changed, but you can totally understand why she would be like that in this world. And if they've, you know, made her a little bit more aggressive off the start, I'm all for it because I loved that performance we saw.
I completely agree. Like, she said like two lines and I was like, yep, that's Ellie. Like, that is perfectly Ellie. And she's funny too. Like, she's got a good sense of humor. Like, Ellie never loses that. And what makes her such a great character and such an interesting foil to Joel is Joel's whole character is like regret, and he would do anything to be able to go back in time. And he is living his life like under the like blanket of something that he's never gotten over. Like, he's living in the past at all times, basically. Whereas Ellie has this innocence of like, she's never known anything other than living in this post-apocalyptic world. And there's that childlike innocence of her where like, she wants to see a giraffe, or like, she wants to play an arcade game, or, you know, she wants to collect comic books. And even though she's consistently like dealing with all of these horrible things around her, and she does go into a darker place by the end of the series, she still holds on to that. And it's almost like that kind of light in her is what pulls Joel back. And so her starting out while still kind of like being that little bit more aggressive, but still like, you know, making some jokes and kind of being a bit sarcastic, like, she's just such a fun character to watch. And I'd be interested, I think we pointed out like, we love Ellie, but I'd be interested to know like what someone who's never played the games thinks of her, because she's very like, she's very in your face, like, she's kind of an aggressive character. And like,
yeah,
I don't know if that's appealing or if that's just like, oh, we love Ellie, we know what's gonna happen, and like, she's such a cute kid,
you know. You know what's so ironic about that though, when you say it, is like, and especially like after having played the second game as well, I know like I'm not gonna spoil anything to do with that, but I would almost say like, we say we love Ellie already and the audience doesn't. Like, I would almost argue that I like Ellie less after playing more of the series. I liked her more at the start, like when the audience would be meeting her. So that's an interesting like thing to bring up, and maybe something to talk about another time. But yeah, it's interesting to see like what they catch on about. One thing that I thought was interesting, and I was reading a couple of reviews about this, and I came across, was like the one area where a couple people had pointed a flaw, and I didn't really notice it at the time, but I can totally see the criticism after considering it, is that whole scene at the end when they actually reveal like, oh no, I've been bit, but like, I'm fine, this was from 2 weeks ago or whatever. It seemed like that went by really quickly, and like, it almost wasn't, for all the, like, that's the crux of the story, right, is that Ellie is the person who's immune to this. And it did seem like it went by kind of quick, like, and I wonder if that's something where like, oh, we already know she got bit, like, we've seen this before, but I wonder if that was a little confusing for someone that hadn't, you know, that's a pretty big plot twist to kind of come out of nowhere, and they're kind of being gunned down, and it's dark, and you can't really see, and there's a big conversation around that point too in the game, which didn't happen in the show, and so I wonder like if that was a problem or not. I'm not sure, but it is interesting to think about.
My assumption on that is that was intended to be kind of like a big dramatic moment, like almost like hanger that is then going to be like immediately addressed in episode 2, because they definitely like, they're pretty heavy-handed about hinting that Ellie is special for some reason. When we first meet her, like, she's being kept, and like the whole idea of like the Fireflies are just abandoning everything they've been doing for the last 2 years because Ellie needs to get out of here. Like, I don't think it's a huge leap to for someone to guess what Ellie's role is going to be, but I think that's kind of the big, like, it's a big moment to end on. I think it's supposed to be like, it's a pilot episode, right? So that's the big cliffhanger. That's the kid gets pushed out a window. Like, I have to watch what happens next, right? But that scene, holy shit. Like, I think before we can talk about that scene, we have to talk about the last scene of the pre-time skip with Sarah, because those scenes parallel each other to an extreme. And they are not easy to watch.
That Sarah scene was one of the saddest things I've seen in a long time. Like, I don't know. I was just one of those like choked up moments for sure. Like, and you know, it's coming, but just the emotion that they create, the way that she's like breathing so heavily and Tommy's like standing over on the side and, you know, he knows what's happened, you know, and he's just watching Joel. And it's just like, man, I guess that's proof that it's really well done, right? Because if it can get you and you know what's happening, then that's just, what more do you say? So sad. So sad.
I almost felt like it was worse the second time, because the first time it's shocking and it's sad and it's horrible. And then you know, you move forward. But the second time, I'm anticipating, like, I was almost crying like 20 minutes into the game because I just knew it was coming up and I wasn't ready to handle it a second again. And then I feel so much closer to Joel from having played the game that, like, he's not just some guy I'm getting to know. I genuinely care about Joel already. And Pedro Pascal, like, did an absolutely phenomenal, like, a very convincing job of grieving over his dead daughter, which I can't imagine is a very easy performance to give.
No, but I wouldn't think so.
Like, it was a cry moment. Like, I went into it knowing, tears, and then, tears. And I'm very concerned for episode 9 because I feel like there's going to be another horrible moment.
Oh, man. Yeah, 100% there is. And you're right. It does parallel that last scene really well because you can, you know, you can see the parallel of, like, the gun being pointed, obviously, at Ellie this time. And Joel just is like, no, like, screw this. Like, this is not happening again. And that's the fuel he needed to really take that extreme sort of action. But at the same time, it, like, it's not like they reacted like that was some barbaric act, you know, like, it's they've seen that before.
Well, I think the difference is, like, there is that moment where the flashlight blinded him, which was very similar to, like, with Sarah. Like, he gets hit with a flashlight and then the shooting starts. And so the flashlight gets him in the second time around with Ellie, and then Joel just loses his shit. Trigger. Like, he's like, this is not going to happen again. And, like, you know, Joel's haunted by it, right? Like, he's dreaming about Sarah. He's dreaming about
still
Tommy.
Wearing the watch.
Still wearing the watch, which is another scene, I think, straight from the game of her, of Ellie telling him his watch is broken.
Yeah.
While he's having that nap, and he kind of wakes up and just sort of, like, you know, he reacts but doesn't say anything back to her. So that's another very, like, game scene. And obviously that watch is going to be important throughout the show and throughout the game.
That scene actually where she wakes him up is pretty funny when they're arguing about, like, well, what am I supposed to do right now? And she's like, I'm going to read this book.
Yeah, and it's, she finds those codes. And then, of course, the show ends off with an 80s song, which code for bad times ahead. That's not good foreshadowing for our characters.
It is not. So I don't know, Kate, any last thoughts on The Last of Us or anything you're hoping to see in the second episode? We are recording a little bit after it's out, but we will be watching it soon.
I think just a couple, like, miscellaneous thoughts here. I love the design of I don't know if that was a clicker we saw in the sewers. It was a bit more advanced infected. I absolutely adore the design of it. I think it looks phenomenal. I think, well, the spores make a lot of sense in terms of, like, how this realistically would spread. I understand why they didn't want to do spores in the show and just have that be, like, a complicated thing of where characters can walk or have to wear masks all the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're paying such a big amount of money for these actors. I don't think they're going to want to strap gas masks to their face for a third of the show. So totally makes sense.
So that makes sense. And I think the other thing that's interesting, I'm looking forward to season two, is we have confirmation that we're going to go see Bill and Frank.
Yes.
Which is interesting because we definitely go see Bill in the games, but it's not a Bill and Frank kind of situation.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see if we are going to be able to interact with those characters together and kind of get their relationship as was alluded to in the game. But I think that kind of makes sense. Like, we don't have time to go through every big plot point in the game. And so kind of consolidating Bill and Frank into one meeting now early on to get some supplies, as opposed to, like, a 4 or 5 hour gameplay section, makes a lot of sense.
At the same time, it's interesting because I thought of that too, but I also thought, you know, it could be that they're listing Bill and Frank, saying that as if they don't know Frank is dead. Like, Frank could have passed away since they last got a message. It's not like they're in daily contact, and that could be, like, a reason why Bill's place is now dangerous and, you know, the traps are all set up or something like that. So interesting to see how they deal with that, for sure. And obviously, I think you alluded to it before, but something do you have anything else for the show? I don't want to change topics to the next episode.
No, I don't know. I guess Tess is the only character we haven't brought up, and Tess is great.
Yeah.
I'm very, very pleased with Tess.
Yeah, Tess was good, but I mean, that's the one thing I'm really looking forward to in the next episode.
Wow, that's really morbid, James.
Well, no, but I mean, like, it was so, like, just the emotion they were able to get out of the, you know, the other stuff. Like, it's morbid, sure, whatever, but I'm interested. Like, it's a cool scene, you know?
Yeah.
Interested in that. I'm interested in Bill, like you said, as well. I think that was my number one answer for sure. Like, I love that part of the game, the way the trap and you're hanging upside down and all that stuff's going on.
Yeah.
You know, you get the bow for the first time, I believe they're right. I think so, or you get some weapon at Bill's place. I can't remember.
I don't think it's the. I think the bow is pretty like later game.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
It's been a while. But anyway, I'm excited to meet Bill, and just like, man, I want to see more of Tommy as well. Like, I want to see how he has changed since the outbreak happened. Like, we only really see him, or we only have seen him in the previous, you know, pre-outbreak scene. So I'm sure we'll obviously get to see him later on. But I always think Tommy's interesting in The Last of Us. So it'll be cool to see him going forward as well for that show. But yeah, so that's The Last of Us. Like we said, we'll be doing bonus episodes every week to talk about our impressions of the episodes going forward. So please check those out if you're interested. But for now, let's move on to the second topic of today's show, which is a game I've been playing called Tinykin. Or I've actually beaten this the other day. It's the second game I've beaten in 2023, everybody. Congratulations to me. You can all clap
congratulations
for me from wherever you're listening to this podcast from. Okay, perfect. Yeah, so Tinykin, it's a cool game. This is a Game Pass special, and I played it because I was like, you know, I just beat God of War, and I'm going to start Plague Tale, but I need to play something a little bit less emotionally taxing in between, preferably like 10 hours or less. And wow, Tinykin is extremely happy, pleasant, bright, and takes about 6 to 8 hours to beat, so it just fit the bill. And here we are. I'd listened to a couple other podcasts, heard some good stuff about it. And let me tell you, this game is just like one of those, you can just turn it on, you can pay as much attention as you want. Like, there is a story to it, but it's mostly just a puzzle platformer kind of game. So for those watching, got some video of playing it here. This is thanks to Jane Gaming. I'm just using the footage here from this channel. So thank you very much to him. But so this game is kind of like if you envision a Super Mario, like a 3D Mario style platformer type of game. And you know how Mario's going to have all the coins kind of laying around and different things to collect. Mm-hmm. So you're pretty much moving around these big environments, collecting all that stuff. But there's no combat in this game. You don't have to fight anything. And instead, it's kind of been replaced by just different puzzles that you have to solve using these different Tinykin creatures. And so it's almost like, I would say, Mario Odyssey. But if you replace any kind of combat whatsoever with like a Pikmin type of mechanic where you have to pick up these little Tinykin out of eggs, and the different colored ones will all have different abilities. So you'll see now if you're watching that there's a bunch of purple ones following him. The purple ones are strong and they can pick things up. So even though you're shrunken down, you can pick up, you know, things and carry them around to different locations, for example. So you're pretty much going around these environments. It is kind of a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids environment as well. The story, from what I understand, I, you know, watched about one cutscene before I realized I wasn't here for the story. You're this little guy named Milo, and he is a spaceman who gets transported back in time and shrunken down. And it's also 1991 now, apparently, even though he's from the future. And so you meet up with these little bugs inside of a house, and there's this scientist guy, and he's like, I can help you get back to your time, but you're going to have to gather these 6 components to create a time machine to help you get back to your time. And that's why you're going around this house. And so in every room of the house, you have a different activity you're doing, where when you go to the kitchen, you're like gathering the ingredients to make a cake, and then you've got to get it all to the blender and turn it on and make the cake. So this person will trade you, this other bug will trade you what they have because they needed a cake, so you can take the component you need to go build the time machine kind of thing.
Right.
That's the whole point.
It is just like ridiculous little charming things, essentially. Like,
absolutely.
It's just, yeah. It is not a good story, but it is a delightful story.
The story is just the reason, it's like justifying why you're doing it. It's really loose. I will say there's like some funny characters, like the when you go around, it's very much like a, I would say it's like a Paper Mario style writing, where the characters kind of have quippy one-liners that they'll say to you, or like sometimes you'll see a character who's hiding around a corner and you'll go talk to them, and they'll just be like boo in all caps, and like, you know, something just stupid. But it's the kind of thing that catches you off guard sometimes. I didn't talk to every NPC, but they're kind of funny, and they have little actions, like sometimes they're jumping up and down, they're really worried about something, and you know, they break the fourth wall, stuff like that. It's cute, but I mean, what's really addicting about this game is just there's so much stuff to collect. The Tinykin are on the ground, You need to find like letters and envelopes to take back to a mailbox. You know, you're collecting all the pollen, which you need to save up, and then you can, you know, buy, there's a little upgrade system where you can do like a hover jump and you can go further the more you buy. And so you're always just accumulating and collecting. And there's a checklist at the start of every level. You're trying to get these different, you know, items from all around the stage. And the stages themselves, there's only, I think, 5 or 6 in the game, but they're just humongous. Like the amount of, you know, different areas within them. You know, there's one where it's the little girl's bedroom and she's got a little castle set up on the counter of her desk. And so there's a whole section of the level where you're kind of running through a Lego castle. And then there's, you know, planets hanging from her ceiling. You've got to find a way to get up high enough using the tiny kid, climbing ropes and finding different shortcuts, making it all around and exploring until you have enough. And it's just, you know, what's the word when you just have that dopamine hit over and over again as you collect and see these collectible numbers just go up and up. And you find little secrets, you know, hidden in little corners when you're looking around. It's just a delight to kind of explore and you know, see the little world and how they've crafted it and these little bugs and their little, you know, little bar in here in this shoebox for some reason. They got a little iPod in the back to play music with headphones, you know, like it's really cute the way they've constructed the world and what it's made of. Really, really thorough thought put into a lot of it, I think.
Yeah. This looks really cute. This has been on my list, and I think it is perfect for the exact situation described in which, like, I've just had some emotionally heavy games or maybe something very difficult, and I just kind of want to relax, reset, and just sort of, like, get that, like, watch a Disney Pixar sort of movie mm-hmm. kind of atmosphere. And that's exactly what experience this kind of looks like to me. And you're right, the Paper Mario vibes, even just from looking at it, like, it's got that kind of paper art style as well where the characters are modeled. But it is like huge Paper Mario / Bug Fables kind of like vibes I'm getting from this.
Yeah, there's even one character actually in the game when you talk to them and they're like, I've never actually seen my own back before. Like, I can't turn around because of like these 2D characters. It's pretty funny. But I mean, yeah, I would totally recommend this to anyone who's got a passing interest. I mean, like we always say, you can't go wrong on Game Pass. I'm looking at it now online. Mm-hmm. This game has a 10 out of 10 on Steam, 8 out of 10 from IGN, and 4.7 out of 5 from GOG. So, I mean, you're not going wrong for sure if you play it. And it's well worth it. It's fun, cute, short, snappy, doesn't waste your time. And I totally recommend Tinykin. So that's that. But, you know, I'm really interested to hear about your topic today, because when we got together to watch The Last of Us, you had mentioned mm-hmm. another TV show to me as a suggestion. So why don't you tell me all about Invincible?
So I'm going to tell you very little about Invincible, actually, because I don't want to spoil anything in this show. Hmm. And that makes it very difficult to talk about it without doing that.
It's a lost situation or a...
It is a lost situation. It's a total inscription. This is the kind of show where you really don't want to know anything. Like, it is going to be an experience for you to watch. It's coming out. So season 1's out. Season 2 just had a teaser trailer to be kind of coming out, I think, in like late 2023. So they're still working on it, but it should be out by the end of this year. And it's very much like a superhero cartoon when you look at it. Like, it comes across like very kind of got those like nostalgic like 90s Sunday morning cartoon kind of vibes.
Just looking at the picture of it, you know what it reminds me of the most is like Teen Titans or some style of that animation.
Yes, that is exactly the kind of style it is emulating. And that may or may not be a trap. And that is as much as I will tell you. It is emotional. It is not at all what I expected it would be when I first started watching this show. It was recommended to me by someone. I was like, you know, it looks fine. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not opposed to it. I'm not interested in it. I will give it a shot. And we watched the first episode, and we got about halfway through the first episode, and I'm doing that thing where I'm like, yeah, this is cute, but like, I don't really see why you hyped it up so much. Like, it's just cute. And then by the end of the episode, I was looking at them going, okay, so put the next one on, because holy fuck, what just happened? and then you binge through the show, because you are just constantly left on the edge of your seat.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you sold me. I mean, you sold me for sure. And this is a show I've heard a lot of people talk about, like on the internet, like actually not people that I've like not my real life people, but I've seen so many like randoms
those
talk
fake
about
ones
this
on the internet.
Yeah, there's some randoms, you know, internet randoms. They talk about the show as if it's like, wow, this is so surprising, so amazing. And yet when you look at it, it's like, how could this be something that's like that? But you know what? Maybe I should give it a shot. I think I should.
It is unassuming. It is like when you're out for the day and you find a teeny tiny little restaurant that doesn't look like much. Mm-hmm. And you go in to eat their food and it is the best Thai food you've had in your life. And I will say nothing else about it because I don't want to overhype it. I don't want people to go in the expectations of being like, this is the best show I've ever seen. And it's going to be so wild because it maybe isn't the best show I've ever seen, but it is definitely a unique experience. It has a lot of interesting commentary. It is extremely well written. It is quite funny. And it has a lot of really unique kind of motifs that run throughout the show. And it is definitely more than what it seems. So I would say watch The Last of Us. And when you are waiting for episode 3 to come out, because they are on a weekly basis, you can binge Invincible in the meantime.
Exactly. It's a perfect plan. But in the meantime, before that, you can stick around with us to answer our listener mail question for the week. Because as listeners will know, we like to answer one question from our listeners every single week. But you can send to us if you'd like to be a read on the show, just like James did today. We'll get to his question in a second. But if you'd like to join us next time on Listener Mail, you can write in to cloudcontrolpod@proton.me or get in touch with us wherever you'd like on Twitter or, you know, whatever social media we're on. You can find us anywhere down below in the description of the show or the podcast. But Kate, what would James like to ask us on the show today?
Well, apparently you wrote in this question, so why don't you tell us what you want to say? thankfully it is not you, but we have a wonderful listener mail. It says, hello, Katie and James. Great name, by the way.
Thank you.
Now that The Last of Us HBO has broken the video game adaption curse, much like Sonic the Hedgehog, Castlevania, Arcane, and Detective Pikachu before it, what video game franchise would you like to see break through the curse next? Which is a great question and really good shout out to some stuff like Arcane and Detective Pikachu and some other really good adaptions that have come out recently as well. But you know what? Why stop at that? And why not have a few more fantastic TV shows and movies to watch?
I know. Yeah, it's really been on the upswing. You know, I remember like back in the GBA days and like those old the mid early 2000s, it was like anything that was licensed was just like, this is going to be shit. Everything is bad. And now it's like we're actually having like a more than it seems like more than 50% chance that things are good. You know, I even think about like the Halo TV show that I don't think people thought was amazing, but even that was like still good for people that like Halo, not like some waste of time type of thing we would have got 10 years ago. So it's a cool question. So I think we're both going to pick out something that's announced, right? And then also something that's like completely unannounced. And
Because there turns out, if you actually look into it, there are tons of things
there's
that have been
list.
Like, there's a big list. And I don't believe a lot of these things will actually come out because a lot of them are like early talk. They haven't started filming, like their TBA kind of status.
Yeah, there's literally like most of them are listed status unknown, like Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah.
Just Dance, the TV show, status unknown. Do we ever think we're going to get a Just Dance TV show? I don't think so.
I don't think so. But a lot of them do seem kind of legitimate. Like I'm sure the God of War show is going to come out like much in the vein of The Last of Us. And we know like Arcane season 2 and Castlevania season 2, and they're doing all sorts of apparently, you know, all sorts of things. So it's very exciting.
Yeah.
And I guess I'll go off on that maybe just as a quick intro. The thing I'm most looking forward to is actually The Ghost of Tsushima.
Oh, yeah?
Nice. Coming out. I just think that that is such a fantastic world. And I think I maybe have a little bit of bias in the sense of, like, I'm just playing through God of War now, so I don't feel like I need more God of War. And I also think that Tsushima is just an easier world to adapt in the sense of, like, we don't have to necessarily follow Jin the entire time. Like, there's a lot of other characters that we could follow in the world that might adapt well, whereas doing anything God of War without the main few cast of characters or that like core ensemble is a little bit more challenging. And I just don't think you can adapt or change Kratos' story much. So it's very just let's relive the games again instead of like here's a big, amazing, cool world to to go through, and also it's fucking beautiful. So
yeah, I think that's what I'm excited for too. If that, I mean, if that's one of the shows that comes out, it's just the mm-hmm. like, I would expect that to be like, they will emphasize as many cool visual shots as they can, just because of the way mm-hmm. the game emphasized the way like the horizon looks in the environments. And that's something that I don't think yeah. we'll get from a show like The Last of Us, at least in that way. So it would be nice to have the contrast. For me, I was looking through the list of all the upcoming ones, and I mean, honestly, I'm most excited probably for the Castlevania, the next season of the mm-hmm. Castlevania show, if they were to make it, because I just loved that animated show. But to pick something different, I'm going to go with Mass Effect. I think that would be such a nice translation to a TV series. Similar reasons to you for picking Tsushima is that they don't have to follow Commander Shepard or any of the known cast. They could pick literally anyone across a whole universe, similar mm-hmm. to like Star Wars or Star Trek could do. You know, they just have such an expansive world they've created. I mean, I'd personally love to follow a main character of a non-human race. You know, they just have such interesting backstories. And as someone that doesn't read through all the codec all the time when I play through, and, you know, I haven't read any supplementary material of Mass Effect because there's just so much, like, I just can't devote that much time. But if it was a TV series or a movie or something, I would love to experience, you know, that galaxy, that universe from a different perspective, maybe on like a Quarian pilgrimage or something like that, you know. Very cool. But yeah, it could be very interesting. And, you know, we always talk about like, I'm kind of neutral on Star Wars. I don't like Star Trek that much. Mass Effect is my space series, and I would love to see it become like, you know, a multi-franchise property as well. So that's what I would say.
That is a game I didn't consider, but it's such a good pick, because you're yeah. right, it has that proper quality of like, you know, it could be as big. There's like a universe where like that could be Star Wars, because it's yeah. got that same kind of appeal of like a massive galaxy with like races and, you know, multi-generational like wars and conflicts. Yeah,
politics and all like the, you know, how are they going yeah. to collaborate and work together to make the galaxy inhabitable, and like what are the opposing forces to that, you know, whose interest lies on which side. So interesting, Kate. Oh my god,
that is a fantastic pick. I am not a space person, but I consider watching it.
It could be like Game of Thrones, but in space, honestly, the different factions. It'd be...
Have you heard of The Expanse?
I have. Well, man. You know, I was thinking about shows, too, that are not announced for having a TV show, or games that mm-hmm. don't have any kind of plans. And I was going through my list on like how long to beat of like what would make the best game into a TV show. And you know what I thought of? I pulled a really random one out, but I just had this thought in my mind. I would love to see a Little Nightmares style TV show, but like mm-hmm. as an anthology, kind of like Black Mirror, because the animation style in Little Nightmares is so interesting, and I think they could do like a Tim Burton-y kind of claymation style TV show, mm-hmm. but it could be an anthology, kind of telling short stories in the little type of environments like in that game, because there's some creepy environments that I think could make a really nice 20-minute short story from Little Nightmares. So I would love to see that.
I love this. This is fantastic. And you could even like pull other games into like, there could be a Limbo episode yeah. because like that's another great.
Oh my God. Hit game horror like that, indie, right? Horror indie anthology.
Horror TV indie anthology.
Inside Limbo, Little Nightmares.
Oh my God. We have hit on something.
Where's okay, Little Devil Inside? Like, when that game comes out, that's coming in. Carrie.
Your answer is so much better than mine. I'm in love with this idea. Like immediately.
What's your Sonic Forces?
Obvious Sonic Boom, actually.
Sonic Boom, that's already a TV show, dumbass.
Oh, damn it. Well, it clearly was a good idea.
I don't know about that.
No, I had a hard time with this because I kept picking games that I thought would make for really great shows, but then I was like, you know what, they rely a lot on like character and like player expression, mm-hmm. and that doesn't always translate well. So I was thinking games like Nier and like any Souls game and like Undertale and even Papers, Please, like stuff like that, is they have such compelling worlds and stories, but so much of what makes them really unique is tied to yeah. that like player agency. So I was trying to think, okay, I got to get away from that sort of style of game. And what am I thinking? And I've come up with what I think would be a really cool idea in that. I mean, I pitched Red Dead that one time, which I still think was a good, is awesome.
I mean, that's a slam dunk. I still think Red Dead
makes a fantastic TV show, but I thought I would like to see a Transistor show.
Ooh.
Supergiant has some of the best voice acting and animation in the industry, and Transistor specifically is one of the games that I think is the most like linear and has like kind of a set story that it's telling, whereas Hades, like, that's tough to turn into a show because you can't you know, what is he going to do? Do the run 27 times until he finally makes it out?
Hades would have to be like a sitcom, because it would have to be timeless. Yeah. Like they'd have to make it so like every episode exists in its own time. You know,
you could make a Hades sitcom. That's really cute. And I liked Pyre selfishly because I never beat the game, so I kind of want to see like where it ends up. But again, like a big aspect of that game is making the player choose like what character gets out and gets to like ascend back to like the living world. And so that's hard because you don't get to choose as an audience member.
Yeah. They'd have to make it like an emotional twist or something to fill that in. But you're right. It's not the same effect. Exactly.
But it's not quite the same. So then I settled on Transistor. Like Transistor has an amazing art style. It has amazing music, which you could put into the show. The world is really neat with that kind of almost like cyberpunky tech sort of genre, but it's a bit different. And the main character is really neat. You got Red and the sword, and I just think that could be a really cool story to tell. And it would fit the television medium as well as it fits a video game, I think.
I'm in, except for the fact that you'd lose the combat, which is like so much fun in Transistor, which but that's going to be any game we pick. You're going to lose some mechanics.
Exactly.
But what a cool conversation though, you know, like I think we're going to get a lot more of these. Obviously they're not all going to be good, but I think there's going to be a lot more just crossover in terms of all types of properties, whether it starts as a game or a movie or anything. Cause that's where the money is, you know, is when you can break into like, it's like Pokemon or like Star Wars, like all these big franchises. They got everything going on. Cyberpunk now too. They got anime and novels, even though the game came out with that horrible release. I don't know, we're rambling now, aren't we? Whew, okay, well now I'm excited to go and watch this TV series we're talking about with Little Nightmares. So let's go to bed and dream about that, shall we?
I hope it's not a little nightmare instead it's just a little nice dream.
little nice dreams. Oh my god. All right, well thank you for joining us on the podcast today, everybody. This has been a lot of fun. Again, if you'd like to be cool like James and write in a listener mail question for next time, please do so to the email address listed in the description of this show. But until next time, we'll be back next week with another fun-filled episode. And this has been Cloud Control, the gaming podcast that's not just good, it's good enough. We'll see you next time.